This year marks 200 years since the publication of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. Britain has been celebrating all things Austen, from a proposal that the author's portrait grace the new £10 note to erecting a giant replica of Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy emerging from a river in Hyde Park. Plenty of Austenites are also active on this side of the pond. Ted Scheinman wrote about his experience at a recent gathering of academics and fans at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The account of the weekend pretty much reads like a letter from Jane Austen's summer camp, including Scheinman's role-playing of Mr. Darcy. Ted is a doctoral candidate at UNC Chapel Hill and has written for the Paris Review, for Slate.com, and The Village Voice, among other publications. Ted, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Mr. Darcy is a pretty plum role. How did you land it?
Well, yeah, I suppose it's a plum role. It's also a very, very intimidating role, principally because of the shadow of Firth. How did I land it?
You showed up?
I showed up.
Were male?
Yeah, no, my agent didn't even have to intercede. Yeah, that's the thing, I think. Being male in a literature PhD program, you know, darcifies you in, to a certain extent, but not in the bad way. But yes, so I don't really know how I was chosen. One of the two principal professors who was running the conference, this was Inger Brody, who is a wonderful Austen scholar, emailed me telling me that I was playing Mr. Darcy, as if from on high. So it was fun. The tights lived up to their name, I suppose you could say. I didn't have much to do because, you know, playing Darcy, I was only there at the ball for a couple of hours. Basically, I just had to look down my nose at people and say some inappropriate things. Ideally, use the phrase Hottentot as often as possible. But that was the sort of climactic ball on Saturday night.
Well, what else did you have to do?
I was the chair of the plenary panel on Austen Romance, and then I appeared as a guest film critic on the plenary panel on Austen Film. And beyond that, I was asked to compose a one act based on Jane Austen's Juvenilia, which came off okay, I'd like to think. So it had all of the academic conversation of a conference and all of the sort of customary of a Civil War reenactment.
Well, that's what's such an odd mix, it seems to me. I mean, I guess this happens with a lot of literary sort of conferences, you know, where you have this kind of mix of people who are academics delivering papers and people who are rabid fans who want to come and costume and relive the book. How do you balance the two at a conference like this?
That's a great question, and I guess that was perhaps the underlying focus of the Paris Review piece behind the jokes. But as for rabid fans, I will say that everyone was quite well behaved. There was no frothing at the mouth, arguments about Brontes or anything like that.
Okay, not so rabid, but restrained Austen fans. Nonetheless, how did they respond to sessions like the male and female gaze in Pride and Prejudice and such academic sessions?
I mean, they took a lot of notes and they asked a lot of really great questions. At the same time, the academics had been primed to write papers that were challenging and interesting, provocative, and didn't pull any punches. But what a novel idea. You had to write them in such a way that they could be understood. So you had people who were delivering complex and persuasive arguments about Austen, but delivering it in such a way that anyone from a 50-year-old high school teacher to this little 11-year-old girl who was one of the most involved people at the conference could understand. So yeah, it was great, and there were really good responses, and then afterwards there would be these breakout sessions at the four principal venues, and those that I eavesdropped on or interloped in were all pretty, you know, just pretty great. I mean, these people were in it to win it, they were taking notes, and they were here to learn stuff and teach stuff. So yeah, it was an actual dialogue.
Like many people, I've spent a lot of time reading Jane Austen, loving Jane Austen for years. But I have also, you know, tried to explain to a lot of male partners why I love Jane Austen, and some of them get it, some of them don't. You're a man in a PhD literature program. I'm just wondering, do you sometimes feel like the lone man at the ball?
Well, actually, it's funny. Yeah, I've certainly been in classes like that. And yeah, it's actually funny to be the lone male of the species in a class full of women on the six novels of Jane Austen, because you have a lot to answer for. And there are a lot of men in those books who just behave horribly. I mean, I think it's a good lesson in manhood, honestly, to read Austen and to participate as the lone XY chromosome person in the room.
200 years after the publication of this novel, Pride and Prejudice still captivates us and has inspired so many spinoffs from so many different cultures, and also, you know, this whole sort of fantasy, Pride and Prejudice and Zombie. I'm wondering what you, as a PhD literature candidate, think. Why is it so lasting? Why does it stay with us?
Well, I'm firmly not in the camp of people who believe that it's the marriage plot that makes Austen so popular, because you can get that anywhere. I think the majority of people at the conference, if we're talking about the civilians, and also me as a reader as opposed to a researcher, scholar, writer, whatever, the marriage is the cherry on top, right? I mean, what the real draw is principally the prose for me. It's just it's so beautiful and so lucid. She's immensely quotable, right? I mean, you could just... millions of people can just like fill their Facebook pages with one-liners from Austen. But she also has this moral sensibility, which, without ever being priggish, is really something that pricks the reader. You tend to think about small social exchanges as though they're freighted with a great deal of moral consequence, which really is a pretty great way to think about socializing, I think. Not that people should be terrified at all times that they're doing the wrong thing, but more that people should, you know, listen and not draw judgment quite as quickly. Pride and Prejudice, its first title was First Impressions. And the whole point of that book, of course, is that people cling to these first original notions of what they perceive in another person. And of course, they're always wrong. And this is the case in all of Austen's novels. There's not so much a transformation as a minor but crucial adjustment in the heroine's mindset, approach, etc. But the smallness doesn't make it less crucial, and there's something really special about that. It speaks to the everyday lives of humans and offers them ways to be, for lack of a more sophisticated word, better.
Well, as one of the people who loves the literature of Jane Austen and also the film adaptations, I just have to ask, did anybody ask you to peel off those layers and do that white shirt in the pond kind of scene that Colin Firth made so famous?
Well, I'm glad that you asked me, and it's funny that you asked me, but I'm not entirely sure I can share the story of that. But there was a similar, a shockingly similar moment completely on stage. And, you know, your listeners, I suppose, can make of that what they will.
Oh, come on. You can't leave us hanging like that.
Well, I don't know. It was a really wonderful weekend, and I sort of identified a really plausible Lizzie Bennet at the end of it. Let's just put it that way.
And the world then can carry on. Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Ted Scheinman, doctoral candidate and culture reporter for the Paris Review. He's based in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. You can find a link to his experience portraying Mr. Darcy, among other things, for a devoted group of Austenites. We have the link at wordofmouthradio.org. There's more Word of Mouth coming right after the break. Please stay with us.